interesting people in the Bible, acting in what might seem to be a peculiar and particular way. Now, before we make comparisons to him being like a person yelling at random people on the subway, or yelling at athletes at a stadium, or if you remember the old, I think it was Allstate commercials, or State Farm commercial with the fan with the cheese head, Rodgers, 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 you know, before we make that into it, or maybe as my dad would say, go back to the south side, go back to the south side, because the White Sox are on the south side, Cubs are on the north side, and sometimes you had a player from them. But there's something more than just maybe a fan response or a random response here. John is doing something different. And when we look at the parameters and context a little more, we might see that John is fulfilling his job. Take a moment and consider how important context can matter. If you've had a job for 25 years and you retire, and then the person who's filling your job comes in, they're looking at that job, the stability that was, and they're looking forward to it. Whereas if the person who had the job before you was there for a year and was there for a year, and then there was another person there for a year, and it's been turnover and turnover for like the last 10 years, the person coming into the job is shaking in their boots, nervous. It's not a good situation. And so as we look at what's going on, we need to look ahead and behind. And if we look behind, we notice that John is set on bearing witness, set on being more than just that voice crying out in the wilderness, now that he has seen and met the Messiah. We can't set aside the fact that up to John, God has been silent since the final book of the Old Testament in Malachi. There's been a deafening silence from God. And so when John comes crying out, there's this added gravitas to his voice. There's an added something to it. So when he declares something, make straight the path for God, it adds extra to it. It's one of those times where all of a sudden, after nothing, you have so much. Now, the people of Israel who had waited since Malachi haven't necessarily waited so patiently. There have been people who tried to create situations where God would act. We have false prophets, false messiahs cropping up. There was a hard waiting period. It's like when Liam and Barb and I play the quiet game. Last about a minute or two before the first question. Are we done? We're still playing, right? It's not exactly a successful game at this point. And the people of Israel aren't exactly patient in their waiting for John. And so when John comes, they're all anxiety, all wondering about the next piece and the next step. They've longed for this moment so long that they wonder about who John is and what he's doing. Even John, to a small extent, has this lack of patience coming up. Think about it. He has been the prophet of God, crying out to the people, not always in a well-received manner. And finally, the Spirit has descended on the Messiah. Finally, Jesus has come. And you have to understand that John now is ready to pass the torch. He's ready to hit that feet up on the desk retirement stage where Jesus goes. He's been the voice crying out in the wilderness, make ready the path of the Lord, for so long. And I realize we look at the time for a prophet and we think, how long has he been there? But a prophet is not someone whose ministry is for 15, 30 years. They burn so brightly, they push so hard against the grain that they wear themselves and are worn down. You are the mouthpiece for God when you are a prophet. And when you think about what that means, it means God's voice is going through you. It's hard on them. It burns prophets out. John, in essence, becomes like that hitter waiting for that perfect pitch. And the pitcher just doesn't seem to be giving it to him. So he's standing there at the plate, ready and waiting. And so he's going to eventually swing at the wrong pitch. So what is John doing? Well, in some way, he's kind of saying, hey, that's Jesus, that's the Messiah, that's the guy. Stop following me, let me retire, just go to him. He's trying to get people to move on and move forward in every way he can. He's not a fan, but he is doing his best to bear witness to what has happened. Is there a little lack of patience in his constant cry out? Well, yeah. But we can sort of understand that when we consider the weight and the burden he has. He's shouting out and declaring who Jesus is because he desires the people to know. He needs the people to know. He needs to fulfill that call of his. He needs that transition and next step. Now, we could run down several rabbit holes and wonder, well, what happens next for John? What's he going to do next? You know, is he going to retire to a nice place on the Dead Sea and just have a nice cup of coffee to start the day, read the paper? We don't know what John's next steps are going to be because his next steps don't happen. Because while he's in this place of pushing people towards Jesus, his ministry ends abruptly. But what we see happen is his witness bears fruit. His two disciples decide, oh, he's pointing us that way, so we might as well go that way, and they follow Jesus. They follow him and listen to him. Yes, John is that nice, hard, 10-grit sandpaper, the wire brush for God. And he's pushing everyone in that flowing direction. And then it happens. They follow. They follow, and then Jesus, you know, because he can feel them following, turns around and says, what's going on? Why are you following me? He can't help but have heard John's cries. But then they ask where he's staying. What are you looking for? What are you looking for? It's not where are you going, why are you following me, what's going on. What are you looking for? Now, again, there's a difference between 2,000 years and now. When we would see the Messiah, we'd say, well, we're looking to listen to you. Well, instead, they're looking to where he's staying. They want to listen to him. They want to see why John has practically shoved them out the door at him. Why this man? What is it about him? And then on the cusp of that, we see Andrew listen to Jesus and then go tell his brother about it. And then because his brother has a name, well, had a name of Simon, and then becomes Peter. Now, I don't know if any of you have worked a Lego set in the last 5 years. They come a lot simpler than when I was a kid. Now, the Lego company has gotten really smart, and the first 5 steps in the pack are in bag 1. The next 5 steps are in bag 2. It's very nice and transitional. It makes it so much easier. But maybe Wayfair, IKEA, solder could take a step from Lego instead of a bag with everything in it. The fact of the matter is, when things need to be put together, there are steps to be made, transitions to be made, in not dissimilar fashion to the steps of John to Jesus. God, again, is working little things, moving things. We see John in isolation. He's just this guy shouting out for people to follow Jesus. But we put Andrew and the other of John's disciples together in that place at that moment, and then there's this something more happening. And then we see what happens next, and we see how all of a sudden it moves to them following Jesus. And then Andrew bringing his brother named Peter, well, soon to be named Peter, along. And then we understand that then the ministry starts. Then the path to Jerusalem, to the cross, all falls into place. But it's all about finishing bag 1. It takes all of these elements to build a castle, a spaceship, a police station. All of these pieces put together. What always strikes me is Andrew's role in this. He gets this minor line, oh, one of these guys was Andrew. But again, context adds meat on the bones. By John's account, he seems to be the lesser of the two brothers. People seem to relate to Peter through, or Andrew through Peter. He's Peter's brother. He's Peter's little brother. I don't know if any of you have had that kind of moment or relationship. I've had it with my kids since forever. I'm Liam's dad or Barbara's dad. I don't necessarily have that. It's you relate to the main person. And here, always, it seems like Peter's kind of the main person, but he's also not. Because Andrew has this quiet presence in Scripture. There's always this point of 6 degrees of separation that happens between Jesus and Andrew and something amazing. Andrew seems to be that middle bag in the Lego set, so to speak. When we think about Andrew, do we ever really think about he's the disciple who brings a boy with fish and loaves to Jesus? Do we think about when Greeks are asking questions about who this Jesus is? What's he doing? Who's the one who brings them to Jesus? It's Andrew. And who's the one who brings his brother to Jesus? Andrew is that almost unsung hero who quietly brings people to Christ, just day in, day out, seemingly with an insignificant act. There is always following it a significant moment. But as I said last week about coincidence not really existing in God's realm and how really it's more God instances. Insignificance never really happens with God because insignificance almost always has a moment of great significance. When Jesus heals one person, it might seem insignificant when he rubs mud on the blind man's eyes so he sees. But then, after he sees, what is the next step? What is the next steps? He bears witness and tells of what happens. God is this master builder. Every piece matters for God. No matter how small or seemingly insignificant, it all matters to God. No matter how small we see ourselves in the grand scheme of God's kingdom, we are significant for the work and service we do, even if it is simply by telling someone else of our love we feel from Christ, telling someone else of how God was with us, through us, in a moment. Each of us is a block in the bag of God's plan. It's amazing to think how significant we all are in God's plan. Every one of us is like Andrew. Every one of us has the opportunity every day to be like Andrew. Not necessarily bringing our brothers to Christ, bringing this person, but being able to tell of the moment where we talked with God, listened to God, experienced God. Each of us is a block in the Lego set of God's kingdom. Every one of us is a piece that God uses. Brothers and sisters, let us remember how significant we are in God's plan. And let us participate as Andrew did, as Peter did, as John did, in whatever way we have. Be with us. May God be with us as we bear witness to all God is and has done. Amen. Brothers and sisters, at this time, let us respond to God.